Blog Talk Radio.
And thanks. Mojuba Akoda, Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening. Who are tuned in, we give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe, Ashe. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, New Power Radio Network, Manhood, Race, and Culture, All African Empowerment Society, and Unity Design. Please reach out to our supporters on Facebook, Manhood, Race, and Culture, headed up by my co-host on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, Dr. James Jones, Unity Design, headed up by Arlie Gordon, and Unity is spelled UNITEE, and of course, AAE Society, can be reached at aaesociety.org. Please reach out to my brother, Laquay Jewell, my co-host every other Friday night, and find out about the gathering and see how you can get involved and support us building a treasury that was going to suit our specific needs and goals and the African community. So I welcome my co-host tonight. Peace, Dr. Jones. How are you doing?
I'm good, Queen. I'm good. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. I got the blues a little bit. I'm missing my brother. But other than that, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, believe me, I understand that. And you know, it's one of those things that, you know, it's going to be there. Embrace it. Embrace the memories, you know. Embrace it. I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so funny that, you know, tonight we're discussing the Colin Kaepernick stand, failure to stand or choice to not stand for the national anthem. But my brother in the fifth grade, he refused to stand for the national anthem. And his teacher had a fit, called my mom at work and told her how important it was for him to stand for the national anthem. But he refused, and as a result, they started testing him to see about placing him in special education. And the rest of his educational time was spent in special ed, which was, I believe, knowing what I know now about the educational system, the public school system, and society, I believe that was the catalyst for them placing him into special ed, the fact that he refused to stand for the national anthem or the Pledge of Allegiance. So, yeah, this is a subject that's really close to my heart for that reason. And when I attempted to not stand, I got in trouble. I mean, it was no placing me in special ed because they knew better, but, you know, I wasn't lacking in no areas that I had pretty much stood like he stood or did not stand like he chose not to stand. So, yeah, this is a good topic. I'm excited to address it tonight and to hear other people's opinion on it.
The thing for me is that, you know, it's amazing that in a nation where we are supposed to hold freedom of speech, you know, above and beyond any and everything else, that the mere utterance of political protest on this soil causes people to literally lose their minds. Literally to lose their mind, like as if this is you know, Lenin or, you know, Hitler marching in D.C., you know, as if this is the beginning of the end, the unraveling, you know, of Western society. And it, you know, it really does remind me so much of the paranoia that J. Edgar Hoover was able to fan amongst Americans surrounding really the civil rights movement and Black Power era. You know, as if, you know, be very careful, be very leery, because they're going to take us apart, you know, from the inside. You know, it's in many ways laughable, and yet at the exact same time, it's one of those things that, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to really dismiss offhand, because people are so afraid right now. People are acting as if they have no balance whatsoever, all behind a person's decision to sit down, you know, which is in many ways not a revolutionary act, so to speak. So, yeah.
Yeah, I know that on your page, Manhood, Race, and Culture, and for those who are listening on your phone or on your computer, please go to Facebook and check out Manhood, Race, and Culture. There are several posts on Dr. James's page that deal with this, both people who support the fact that he chose not to stand and people who may have issue with it. So please go to Dr. Jones's page, Manhood, Race, and Culture, also on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. So, Dr. Jones, I know you mentioned yesterday that you had written a piece or two about this particular topic, so I yield to you.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead and jump right into it. The piece that appears once again on Manhood, Race, and Culture is titled Petty Protests and Inconsequential Activism, Why Colin Kaepernick's Protest Misses the Mark of Aiding the Black Liberation Struggle. And it reads as follows. Muhammad Ali, the agreed-upon greatest of all time, by sports fans once quipped, and I quote, "A man who views the world the same at 50 as he did at 20 has wasted 30 years of his life," end quote. I absolutely love this particular quote for myriad reasons, most notably because it reminds me to continually reevaluate my political positions and beliefs. It is this reevaluation process that has led me to take significant issue with Colin Kaepernick's recent decision to not stand for the playing of the national anthem. Put simply, Kaepernick's decision to publicly protest in this method is little more than a public tantrum that does absolutely nothing to advance the cause that he claims to be representing. Let me first relate that in another period of my life, I would have wildly celebrated Kaepernick's antics. I myself routinely refused to stand for the playing of the national anthem. During those years, I considered it one of the most poignant ways of protesting the historic wrongs and injustices that this nation has perpetrated against my people for the world to see. A much less wise version of myself would have not only agreed with Kaepernick's refusal to stand for the national anthem, but also considered it a significant blow against, quote-unquote, the man. I also imagine that had I been asked about my one-man crusade, my response would have been eerily similar to Colin Kaepernick's recent response to this matter. The San Francisco quarterback responded in the following manner to a reporter's questioning his actions, and I quote, "I am not going to stand up to show pride in a flag for a country that oppresses black people and people of color. It would be selfish on my part to look the other way. There are bodies in the street and people getting paid leave and getting away with murder. I'm not looking for approval. I have to stand up for people that are oppressed," end quote. As much as my 20-year-old version would have agreed with Kaepernick's position, I now realize that as a 40-something-year-old African-American male who has wrestled with this thing called race for several decades, that oftentimes an absence of experience leads us to prematurely celebrate before victory has been seized. Let me be absolutely clear. It is not that I disagree with Kaepernick's decision to not stand for the playing of the national anthem. It is that he and a host of other like-minded individuals believe that this rather mundane political protest is significant. Now endowed with an insight that only life's lessons can bestow, I consider Kaepernick and like-minded individuals who have rushed forward to support not, and I quote, "standing up to show pride in a flag that oppresses black people," end quote, as persons who fail to understand either the issues facing African Americans or have any semblance of an understanding regarding their eradication. Make no mistake about it, Kaepernick's decision to protest the national anthem reminds the nation, including a segment of Americans who devoutly avoid racial issues, of longstanding patterns of racial discrimination executed by ordinary American citizens, as well as longstanding patterns of institutional racism perpetrated via American institutions. The NFL quarterback was able to protest while neither denying nor dismissing the incredible contributions of African American activists who have strove to let America be America again by spending their entire lives as trailblazers and torchbearers, illuminating and paving a path to success for individuals such as Kaepernick. The euphoria surrounding Kaepernick's protest has led the vast majority of supporters and opponents to ignore a basic query of how does sitting on your ass during the playing of the national anthem solve any of the voluminous problems facing black America? The truth of the matter is that such fleeting public protests barely address, let alone reverse, racial inequality in any significant manner. Unfortunately for the future of black America, today's cadres of attention-seeking contemporary activists appear to consider symbolic public protest as the gold standard of activism. This reliance upon highly symbolic yet totally intangible protests has seemingly duped an entire generation of so-called activists into believing that such antics are akin to the grassroots activism and institution building of yesteryear. It is this institution building that holds the key to black liberation, not symbolic public protests that do little more than invigorate social media sites. If the legions of individuals who support Colin Kaepernick's courageous decision to not stand during the national anthem really want to eradicate racial inequality, maybe their activism should extend well beyond celebrating an inconsequential protest and dedicate their resources toward the historic grassroots struggle to address tangible issues within our community, such as supporting the independent black school movement, job creation, political participation, supporting black entrepreneurs, and volunteering their time tutoring African-American school children. It is in the aforementioned areas and a host of others that the potential for racial uplift and therefore racial equality is found. What is the alternative, you ask? Well, the only realistic alternative is for our activist community to continue what has been their greatest post-Black Power era tradition of sitting on their asses, as Mr. Kaepernick displayed during his protest, griping about racial issues without doing anything definitive toward the creation of independent black institutions, and watching as the world goes by. And that's the piece right there, Queen.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jones. And, you know, when I saw that you were not supportive, I had to ask myself why. So I read the piece. And although I do understand the quote from, I believe you said it was Muhammad Ali, that says that people are doing the same thing 30 years later that they did at 20, then they've wasted 30 years of their life. I do agree with that. However, I think the ball has been dropped with our athletes, with our entertainers, with, you know, our younger so-called revolutionary-minded people who are attempting to protest and attempting to make a difference in their own particular way. On the educational piece, you know, there is not the political education that you and I have experienced, that the generation before us had experienced, and they experienced it because they had to, because they were living it on a day-to-day basis, where to me, Colin is the new, if you will, generation of people who are trying to at least wake up. And so, I don't know, I think we should still support him in his choice to not stand, but also do what we can to educate those who have spoken out not in favor of the fact that he chose to do what he did, just to give the opportunity for some conversations to take place that need to be had. So to me, you know, this served its purpose, and it also exposed a lot of racism that, you know, we all know still exists. From people who have responded and have called him every name but a child of God since he chose to do that based on the national anthem. So we have to look at, you know, how significant is the national anthem at this point when there's so much chaos in the streets. So I do understand where he's coming from. So I'd like to hear more about your particular position on, you know, why it is that it bothered you in the way that it did, and what can we do to help reach out to him and others like him to make them more politically educated than what they are? And I yield.
No, my thing is, once again, I don't have a problem with his protest. What my problem is, once again, not with the protest. The problem is that we are behaving as if a mere sitting down during the national anthem is akin to political activism. It's a political statement, but it's not a political action, so to speak. By political action, I'm seeking something that is, number one, not reactionary. I'm seeking something that is aimed at building black institutions, you know, and you know, God bless him. God bless the, you know, the conversation that has been sparked by what he did, that decision, because it did spark conversation amongst people. However, my point remains, and it's really not even a indictment against Colin Kaepernick, because I understand where that brother is at. And he clearly said, you know, he didn't speak out previously because he was attempting to understand the issue more. So when we have a brother mm-hmm. like that is in many ways taking steps towards consciousness and what have you, one of the things that we failed to talk about, and I think that this issue really does highlight it and put a major spotlight on it, is quite simply the reality that the petty bourgeoisie have been in charge of civil rights organizations for so long, and they have in many ways mm-hmm. made this their one fiefdom, their one area of importance, and they have refused to, number one, train those coming up in real grassroots activism, and additionally, they have refused to step aside when it's very clear mm-hmm. that their mm-hmm. utility and their plans are not working. They are holding, in many ways, vaunted and venerable civil rights legacies hostage. And they're in many ways a major impediment to the work that could be going on. So once again, my problem is not with Brother Kaepernick. You know, I think that his stance is not only courageous, but also going to be a career ender for him. And it's going mm-hmm. to once again prove definitively, it's going to be a lesson that when you stand up for African Americans, it's not out of a non-desire, but the reality is they can't do anything for you to protect you when those powers that be, and in this case it'd be the NFL and NFL owners, come for your head. All we're mm-hmm. able to do is stand around and say, oh, you know what, that's messed up. Look how they did their brother. Well, what is your response to that as a community? And that's really where, you know, the rubber meets the road for the intention of my piece. And it is quite simply, you're spending this time arguing in circles about the national anthem. You know, it's very difficult for me to believe at this late date, even though I experience it repeatedly, that people have not read the national anthem. They're surprised that there's a third stanza. Yes, idiot, there's a third stanza to the national anthem, and that third stanza is a motherfucker if you really understand what it means.
Mm-hmm.
However, it once again proves that the lack of intelligence and education that undergirds the existence of Americans. It's the reason why we're able to see Donald Trump be so powerful, because you have an entire cadre of what can only be termed low information voters. They don't need very much information. They don't, you know, they're one issue people. And when they get that one issue stuck in their craw, they stay with it. Okay, so mm-hmm. once again, my problem is not with Kaepernick. You know, I applaud what that brother did. But my problem, my larger problem, is that we have been duped by charismatic leaders for so long who have stood up and have had their own self-aggrandizement. They've been able to get followers. They, you know, and this began not recently. We're talking going all the way back to Jesse Jackson, if not before uh-huh. him. And what they did, standing up, talking loud, and saying nothing, has now become the tradition of black leadership that people know. So when they see a Kaepernick stand up, they say quite simply, oh, yeah. See, that brother, he's bringing it. Well, that's all rhetorical black bullshit. The question becomes, what institution comes off of this? Does the political fervor that it seemingly ignited last 365 days? And if it doesn't, it's just quite simply more of the same bullshit where people will get rah, rah, rah up. And when it comes time, once that fire subsides, once that emotionalism melts away, you still don't have an institution. You still don't have people who are working towards an institution. What they're waiting for is the next shooting so they can run out in the street and act like an idiot. Whereas those who are truly understanding political power are saying, listen, don't get, you know, bend, don't break. Don't get too high, don't get too low. Keep plodding forward. Dig more every single day. And at the end of digging for 3-4 years, building up for a presidential campaign, look at where they are versus us who say, yo, we you know, the look at what Trump said. Let's get him. You don't have an infrastructure to do it. You know, if there's one thing that I wish that I could remove from my people, it's emotionalism. Because I believe if you remove emotionalism from our people, you would be able to pull out many of those who are exploiting our people because of their emotional nature. And I yield with that, Queen.
Yeah, I agree, Dr. Jones. We've got a lot of work that still needs to be done. And out of respect for the fact that I don't think that this is a flash in the pan incident with Brother Colin. He has continued to speak out since he chose to not stand in reference to political climate and Hillary Clinton and some of the things that are affecting us that do deal with being at least attempting to be politically active and politically educated. So I don't think that this is going to be the only occurrence for him. I don't think he did it as a spontaneous reaction either. I think he did his research. He went back and decided that this was something that he needed to do, and he chose to do it, no matter what the consequences were. And I'm sure if he took the time to research the topic, that he also took the time to think about what the possible consequences could be. So whatever they are and however they fall out, you are exactly right when you speak on the lack of protection that we have a tendency to have for other Africans. And you know I experienced that firsthand, but it still did not stop me from wanting to do what I could in my little world to make sure that the family that I was trying to protect, that the community that I wanted to work so hard for, that the people that I love so much, I did not become cowardice behind it and hide behind it and just wallow in the pain that it caused, that I had to continue on the path that I was on no matter what. So I think that's hopefully, you know, that's where he is and that's where John Legend is as he speaks out against mass incarceration. Van Jones, I'm not so sure of. I think he's in the bed with the Koch brothers, but yet he is at least attempting to speak out. We've got issues with Black Lives Matter that has turned into Gay Lives Matter. And, you know, we get diluted and colluded with other people's issues that don't have anything with who we choose to sleep with, but it has everything to do with every breath that we take on a day-to-day basis trying to make it in this United States of America. So it's up to us, I think, to do what we can to try to reach back and politically educate our people as much as possible. And I'm just hopeful that this is not some flash in the pan type of reaction because he's just frustrated or he felt like he needed to vent. And I hopefully it goes a lot deeper than that. And I guess my next question to you, Dr. Jones, is what responsibility do we have to hold him accountable?
Let me first respond to what you just said before you go to your next question. You're kind of displaying exactly what it is that I'm talking about, the absence of Black institutions. Consider this for a moment. Out of all the Black leadership that we have, and we can talk about the period that even predates the Internet, there has historically only been, since I would say the 1970s, one Black leader who had a institutional backing and a organization behind him that was significant that he could get his voice out to his people, regardless of how the white press reacted to him, regardless of if they loved him or if they hated him. Even when they blacked this brother out, he had an institution behind him, a structure that allowed for his voice to get out. That individual is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Just consider for a moment, what if the NFL says, Colin Kaepernick, we're not covering him anymore. He can go ahead and you know, see what press he can get, but we will no longer allow him to be covered. We will no longer cover him. The white media said they would no longer cover this. Instantaneously, it leaves from the front page. And as a result of it leaving from the front page, that emotionalism that these people have parasitically used as an energy source is going to in every way die down. The emotionalism is gone. And that's what I mean. There is no existing structure. And when we do have the potential for an existing structure, pardon my French, but black people fuck it up through a host of ways. You know, the black press. Come on, the black press is I'm not going to say it's non-existent, but in many ways it is kind of irrelevant, except for Roland Martin and TV1. And even that is a bit offensive, because the only reason that Roland Martin is really who he is because the black folk refuse to read. They'd rather watch a video. So, in many ways, that's sort of my thing. I don't have a problem with this brother going ahead and speaking up, but I also recognize that without, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the reality that black folk are facing, they haven't even begun to set up an institutional base, a non-emotional one, that is predicated upon doing anything for black people. We can't even get our voice out if it wasn't for the white media. And if we're reliant upon them, as Kaepernick is, to get his voice out, to get his views out, we're sunk in the water, because the moment that they tire of the story or they consider it not to their benefit as far as attracting readers to carry it anymore, to cover it anymore, it's off the front page. It's not even on the paper anymore. And I yield with that.
Yeah, it is what it is. The fact that you would bring up Farrakhan, I mean, there are just as many people who disdain Farrakhan as there are people who, quote unquote, acknowledge his greatness. just because he's got his minions does not mean that he's advocating and doing the right thing for the black community. If Farrakhan's our best example.
My thing is that throw out how anyone feels about Minister Farrakhan. Throw out any judgment of him. The one thing that Minister Farrakhan has historically had over other people, other black leaders, is the final call. He can get his voice out. And what I'm saying about this matter is that it actually shows you how weak the African-American community is on something that is as basic as communication. You get what I'm saying? So instead of running out in the street being all emotional, being all wild and what have you, let's work towards creating a real black communication system, a real black press. Let's work towards creating images that would transform the minds of black people. Because let's be honest about it. Our people are the ones who are watching in droves this bullshit that's on TV. They have an insatiable appetite for it. And until we're able to get in front of them, we're lost.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think more people are listening to Kanye than they are to Farrakhan. And those people are not, they don't care about Roland Martin. All they care about is trying to make it through a day without having one of their friends get killed by the state or being subjected to ill treatment, whether it be, you know, through the public system, public school system, or wherever. Our young people are trying to survive. They're trying to make it through a day and still find people in the process that they can look up to. And I think that we're doing an excellent job. You do an excellent job through Manhood, Race, and Culture to establish that communication base. I think our friend Ajay in Harlem is doing what he can do to improve the education of our young people and engage them. Arlie Gordon is doing an excellent job. He has a teen blog talk broadcast that he does out of Detroit. All of us are linked together in some shape, form, or fashion. So I think the reason why all of this is happening is because we are putting together the effort forth to make it happen. And the more that we put an effort forth to make things like this happen, the more Colin and others like him are going to be able to speak their mind without consequence. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to his sports career. All I know is that we can't afford to make him feel that because, and I'm not saying that that's what you're doing. I'm just saying as a society, as a group of people, we can't afford to make him feel bad for speaking out because the next person may not have that much courage because of the backlash that the black community has displayed against Brother Colin. So we have to be careful that we aren't, at the same time we're trying to light the fire, that we're not pissing on it in the process. As we try to expand the political education of our young people, if they choose to speak out and they have done it in a way that's going to be detrimental to themselves or risk their safety, again, it is up to elders in the community to tug their coattail or belt strap, because they're not wearing belts, but to say to them, you know, I appreciate the fact that you were strong enough to stand your ground. But, you know, there are some other things that you need to know about the process that elders before you have made mistakes and learned from them that you need to learn from. And to be honest with you, that's the problem that I have with the local Black Lives Matter group here in Cincinnati, Ohio. They have no respect for the vanguard who have done what they're trying to do and the experience that we have and the potential connections and knowledge that we have to bring to the table. So I have a relationship with them that allows me to be who and what I know it is that we need to be, but yet still use their audience base and their way of communicating to do what it is that we need to do on our side until if and when the time comes that they're ready to listen. And so I don't know. We have to get away from the emotionalism. I definitely agree with that. And if our young people, whether they be in sports, entertainment, or wherever, if they're making a mistake, then it's up to us to tell them. Now, we also had an experience with the Fuck Your Flag movement. You remember when, you know, they ended up in a whole clusterfuck of problems from the feds because of their, you know, attempt to rile up the RBG community. Sister went to jail and faced federal charges, and I believe that she had enough backing, again, from the black community and an attorney that those charges were dropped, and she ended up actually suing for her arrest. So we can't on one hand say, okay, young people, stand up. This is why you should stand up, and this is how you should stand up. And then on the other hand, when they do and they mess up, you know, we kick them in the behind for it instead of embracing them and telling them what they did wrong. And I yield. Dr. Jones?
Sorry about that. I was muted. You know, you bring up a very interesting point for me, and it's one of the things that I dealt with this past weekend, and I finally reached a conclusion, a decision on what I would do on Monday. And it surrounded a new student organization that they're trying to create at my university. And they approached me with the idea of being one of the advisors, the secondary advisor for this organization. And two of the young ladies who approached me, they were former students of mine, and they're matriculating, they're graduating at the end of this semester. So they're bringing these two young African-American men to meet me. And I sit there and I'm talking with one of them, and he's definitely trying to be the alpha male of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And it was literally impossible to get a word in edgewise. He's a Nation of Islam member. He's patterning himself after Robert Muhammad, this the imam out here. And everything sounded like a rehearsed recording of something you would hear at the mosque. You know, well, what we need to do is put the people on awareness, because the Quran says, and nothing turned me, I was so turned off, because I'm like, and I had to tell him, I said, I don't want to hear none of that Muslim boogie shit, okay? Because when you add it all up, y'all ain't doing no more than Christians are doing. And, of course, he took offense at that. But the truth of the matter is I operate from the position of, especially when you're talking about young people, they need to come with a spirit of humility and some type of humility. Because let's face facts, you haven't seen what I've seen. You haven't dealt with what I've dealt with. And to have them approach, as we've seen, and you know with the Black Lives Matter movement, like wild banshees. And the question that ultimately creeps his head up is, when in the history of the world have our people behaved this way and in this manner? And when you ultimately deal with it and realize that never have, they can't understand that and they can't comprehend that. And one of the things that I always took pride in, and people would always say, man, I don't know how you're able to maneuver your way in certain situations, you know, so effortlessly. And the truth of the matter is that I've always been, and I would like to say that I still am to this very day, teachable. That I realize that I learn more, much more by listening to people than I do talking and arguing and debating with them. But that's a spirit that many of our people who want to be leaders and activists, they forget that they're going to be the ultimate servant for the people. They may mouth the words, but their demeanor, their attitude, their behavior definitely reveals that they don't really believe that. And so that's really what we're dealing with when we talk about that step beyond Colin Kaepernick. It is the rush, really the stampede, to stand behind a microphone and to say something about this very issue. When in actuality, if we were really honestly serious about helping us, meaning the collective us, that stampede would be to set the framework and parameter for an independent black school, for a community center, for helping African Americans raise capital and understand the usefulness of capital and money, and the reality that if you don't have this, if you're not on point in regards to this, whites are going to come and take over your area. That's not sexy, though. That's not covered in the media.
Nope.
What's covered in the media is, I want all these white motherfuckers, blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, they heard you. And you know what their response is going to be? Their response is going to be in the denial of a mortgage. their response is going to be at the voting pool, at the voting poll. And it's going to be a response that is going to reverberate for decades. And our response will be standing outside still, talking crazy. You know, and that's the thing that really saddened me about the student group. Because I'm like, oh my God, they have a great idea. They have a very interesting thing that they could do here. But when you add it all up, they're making the exact same mistakes that our people made previously. And what makes matters worse, they don't want to hear about it. Because they know it all already.
Yep, you're right. Okay, so Dr. Jones, by you being a historian, like, we have to go back and, like we did yesterday, go back and look at our history. Okay, so when we became desegregated and we planted that seed, this is the end result of that. That people are more concerned with fitting in, I guess, on some extremes with, for example, the Black Lives Matter movement and accepting people for who they are and that kind of thing, because in their mind, because they, again, lack that history, they think that that's what we were after with the Civil Rights Movement, the even the Black Panther Party to some extent. That's what a lot of them have the impression that we were after. So, again, like, the responsibility, you know, lies with us. But is this, do you agree that this is probably the result of, you know, us wanting to fit in?
I mean, this is what we're seeing now. It's undoubtedly, irrefutably, the result of allowing our oppressors to mold the minds of our children. And they've not only molded the minds of our children and made our children desirous of the things that they had. And these children are now adults. And these adults have had children that they're molding them in the same type of capitalistic ends justify the means economic formulations. But also, we've allowed as a community for others, quote-unquote experts, educational experts, psychologists, psychiatrists, whoever you want to talk about, to come in and build. We talk about Trump's wall to keep the illegal immigrants out. What about the wall that's been built around black children's minds that prevents black independent thinkers from gaining access to it? Think about what we need, what we have to go through to get access to our children at a public school. Who do you go through? You're going through a white school board usually, or maybe a black principal who serves at the behest of white power.
Mm-hmm.
And is going to be very cautious about who's allowed to come in there and to touch those minds.
Mm-hmm.
So in many ways, We're afraid to say this, but it's nonetheless the truth. As a man thinketh, so is he. We've raised several generations of persons of African descent who are, for all intents and purposes, white. And their anger is not necessarily at the absence of a black economic foundation or a black social order. Their anger flows from the fact that at some point, someone within the white world points out to them or shows them that this world that they are attempting to plug themselves into, number one, is never going to be a perfect fit. And number two, you'll never be white. And our people will deny, well, I'm not trying to be white. I'm not trying to be. Well, the truth of the matter is that if you wanted to really deal with the liberation of black folk, you would be expending your energy on building black institutions instead of trying to integrate yourself into white ones. Your anger should not be that white institutions have colluded together to keep you out, which is what racism is. your argument and your disappointment needs to be that there are no black institutions for you to be plugged into. That's where you should begin your anger and your investigation and your plans. But what we do is we get angry when white folks say, no, 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 Negro, we don't have a job for you. No, we don't want you in our community. The black mind goes to, oh, no, 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 I'm going to be there. And never does it revert back to the idea of building up and protecting your own community. And one of the most laughable things, that, and I know that you've seen this, is that we have Negroes who would never want to live in a black community until it's been gentrified. And now mm-hmm. they're rushing back to the old place. And really what it is, it takes us back to the old racial analogy of the white man's ice being colder. And I yield mm-hmm. to that point.
Well, I lived in Over the Rhine in a gentrified community, and you're absolutely right. There are people who would not be found dead down in Over the Rhine that now have businesses there, now patronize the expensive $8 hot dog places when you couldn't get them to come to a meeting if you gave them lottery tickets. So you're absolutely right, Dr. Jones. And I think we are on the same page on a lot of the points that are being raised, and hopefully others who are listening can chime in and be a part of the conversation as well. Because we do have to do better. When you know better, you're supposed to do better. And if you don't do better, then you can't blame anyone except for yourself. So hats off to all of those people who are standing their ground, who are making an impact in their community. And hats off to you, Dr. Jones, for saying what you said and being honest with these young people, because some people might have went along with it just for the accolades that being in a position like that could have brought them. So keep doing what you're doing. I think this is a good point to take a break, because I want to go back to the point that you raised about black free thinkers, because those children are often punished in the public school system and end up in a position similar to what I described happened to my brother in the beginning of the broadcast, where because he refused to stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, he ended up in special education. So you're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by New Power Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back.
And now, to honor America, especially the brave men and women serving our nation in the Persian Gulf and throughout the world, please join in the singing of our national anthem. The anthem will be followed by a flyover of F-16 jets from the 56th Tactical Training Wing at MacDill Air Force Base, and will be performed by the Florida Orchestra under the direction of Maestro Yaha Ling and sung by Grammy Award winner Whitney Houston.
put this on YouTube.
Yeah.
You heard this, dude.
I believe our greatest need as a people is to educate our youth. I believe that we need to move from all of the individuals and groups who are doing great things in their communities to uplift kids through better education, but we need to move from fragmentation to consolidation to coalition. They are simply products that help to create awareness.
Anytime you can put a symbol on a t-shirt that symbolizes unity, that's what we're doing.
Something for people to rally around. I use the colors of red, black, and green to reconnect African American youth with their culture. How do you know where you're going if you don't know where you've been and what you've been through as a people? At best, we are strongest together. And in that sense, I am driven and passionate about talking to as many people and groups all over this country who, again, want to help to maximize the mission, want to help to move forward our kids with better educational opportunities.
Hello, my name is Dr. James Thomas Jones III, and I am the author of a new and exciting book titled Foolish Floyd, The Life and Times of an African-American Contrarian. Now, I'm certain that you know someone like Floyd, 50-something years old from Greenwood, Mississippi, who has all of the answers to Black America's problems, if only we would stop being so stubborn and listen to him. Let me give you a sample of the wit and wisdom that one receives from Foolish Floyd. When told that he was an African American, Floyd responded, "I'm black. Ain't never been in no damn Africa, and neither have you." When I asked Floyd to go and testify about a brutal crime that he had seen committed in his community, his response was, "Let's say that I do go and tell the police who did it. Hell, everyone in the Fifth Ward knows who did it. That ain't no big secret. The next thing you know, old Floyd is going to be down at the police station picking these bastards out of the lineup. Then I have to go to court and testify against them in public. The entire time, I'm living next door to their people. No, sir, I will pass on getting my head blown off. Let someone else play the hero. I would rather be alive." If you think that you would like to read more about Floyd, please visit Amazon.com and purchase a copy of Foolish Floyd, The Life and Times of an African-American Contrarian.
All right, welcome back to Sign of the Times, everyone, brought to you by New Power Radio Network and the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. So, Dr. Jones, I have to ask you this. What would Floyd say?
About what?
About Colin.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what Floyd would say. I don't know. It would depend upon the mood Floyd was in. You know, I shudder to try and speak for Floyd. You know, Floyd actually comes to me like late at night and talks to me. So yeah. I can't, you know, I can't tell you what he would say. He's something totally different from me. There is no telling what this fool would say.
All right. I had to ask because, you know, he has his opinion. And sometimes, even though as quirky as he may be, Floyd, when he has a revelation, he has a revelation. So I just wasn't sure if he had offered his opinion on this particular topic or not.
No, you know the thing is that what I'll do for your sake is I'm gonna ask for it, what it is
okay,
that you're thinking about this, and I'll let you know next time we're on the show together. I will let you know what that fool done said. It's one of the writing process with Floyd is definitely different. It's different. It's nothing like I've ever experienced before. It is literally as if there's a different like as if he takes over my body and fills in his part in every conversation. And there are times when it literally feels as if it's an out-of-body experience. When I was writing the part for Floyd, when he went to the Republican National Convention and heard the Melania Trump's speech, that was hilarious to me, to the point where I woke my wife up from sleeping, laughing in the living room, and she came out and was like, "Yo, are you okay?" Because it was absolutely hysterical. So. Yeah, I'll see if I can channel Floyd and get his opinion upon this.
Okay, that's what's up. I appreciate that. Okay, so tonight's topic, for those who may be just joining the broadcast, we're discussing Colin Kaye's stand or not. Was it the right thing for him to do? What will he do next? What should he do next? And what is your opinion on him taking a stand or not taking a stand, as the particular case would be? And so, Dr. Jones, we started the dialogue, you know, with a piece that you wrote on Manhood Brings Some Culture. Again, go to manhoodbringsculture.com or go on Facebook at Manhood Race Culture and check out the like and group pages. And you'll find not only the article on Colin, but also articles that deal with our society and our culture and us as a group of people. It does not matter if you are male or female. You can check out the page and give your opinion and input on some of the things that you may see. So, Dr. Jones, you being a teacher, a historian, and experienced with doing your homework and due diligence and learning about our history and the role that we've played, both positive and negative, in our community, and the responsibility that we have to make things better in the future, you raised the fact that we need more black independent thinkers, and we do. I definitely agree that we do. But I know even today in the public school system that when our children, especially our young men, express independent thinking, apart from what the teachers are teaching them in the public school system, and we have all this Every Child Succeed, and then it was another program that came along after that was supposed to be the best thing since sliced bread, our children are often left behind, and especially our young men, they're taught not to be free and independent thinkers. So how can we have and do both when so many of us are still trusting the public school system with the future and the education of our children?
You know, the simple answer to that is the eternal age-old answer that we've always had, and it is to educate our own. It is imperative that at this late date that our people are steadfastly not only recognizing the need to educate their own, but they are actually doing it. There is no doubt whatsoever that that's what we need to be doing. You know, you had to have been living under a sealed rock not to understand that that's what we should be doing. But the truth of the matter is, and the reality is, that the average African American child is going to be engaged in the public school system, or some school system that is not created by us and serving the interests of us. So in that regard, I think that we need to look at some of the examples around us of other groups that have gone ahead and sent their children to public school systems and still been able to instill within their children the idea of collectivism, the idea of who it is that we are as a people. And I repeatedly refer back to these people, and I actually wrote a piece titled "Don't Hate, Emulate." I'm talking about the Jewish community, you know, the white Jewish community, and the idea that, quite simply, they have their children in yeshivas, they have their children in Saturday schools, they have they're teaching their traditions. One of the things that you would have to respect, even if you disagree with their actions and their antics, these quote-unquote radical Islam groups that, you know, are raising their children up in a certain way of life, in a certain worldview. One thing that you can disagree with, you know, the attack on 9/11, but you could never forge a very reasonable argument to say that the people who executed or allegedly executed this plan did not know why they were doing it. And that is what we need to be doing as a people. We need to instill, number one, love for our people within our children to the point that it's their only possible reality, that they don't know anything other than to love and to fight for their people, for all of their people. So I think that that's the path that we have to go. You know, the independent school business is a very great thing that should be further supported by our people. But for those who are still ensnared and entangled in the public school system, we need to go through every measure to educate our own. Don't allow someone else to educate your children. You know, I'm always reminded of the advice an NFL player gave to another NFL player. He said, what you need to do when you're looking at your child is consider your child a tape recorder, because they're going to record everything that they see and everything that they hear. Now what you need to decide is, do you want your voice to be the primary voice that's on that tape? Do you want your lessons and your knowledge to be the primary things on that tape? And so that's how we need to begin to look at it. And if I could instill anything in our people, it would be a desperate, unending desire to read, and to read our literature, mm-hmm. to read our classics. It's okay if you read The Diary of Anne Frank, but don't tell me you've read The Diary of Anne Frank and you have not engaged Asada, the autobiography of Malcolm X, the autobiography of an ex-colored man, The Miseducation of the Negro, The Souls of Black, and the list could go on and on and on to infinity. And I yield with that point.
Ashe, I think you're right, Dr. Jones. Now, there are things on manhood raising culture that people can also go to if they want to, you know, do some research. Can you talk a little bit about manhood raising culture? And I know when we were engaged with the Freedom Movement, you mentioned that there's some information there that people can use for educational tools.
Yeah, I mean, you know, manhood, race, and culture actually grew out of a challenge made by my students one semester, and it was how could social media, how could the Internet be utilized for positive? And so out of that grew manhood, race, and culture, because I was determined to show them that it could very well be used for these things that they claim that they want, you know, to experience on the Internet. So what it has grown into is something beyond just the blog. And right now, if you are to go to Manhood, Race, and Culture and go along the education tab, you'll find three classes listed: History 1313, History 1323, and then History 4213. I use my blog as a way to not only communicate with my students, but also to put videos up that my students are supposed to not only view, but also engage in the comments section. And it's almost, although we're still meeting face-to-face, it is in many ways a online component to my class. And so what is, you know, for anyone who wanted to see what we were doing in 1313 or 1323, it's right there available, open to you, free. There is no charge, no nothing like that. You can jump in there and you can debate with my students. You can point out when they're right and celebrate them, and also point out when they're wrong. You know, I recently, my latest post that I put up today dealt with, it's basically a letter to my students that is aimed at explaining to them why yesterday when they came to class and they were not prepared, I kicked them out. I kicked 80% of my classes out yesterday. And only those who had done the homework assignment, which was viewing a video for their class, were permitted to stay. And we had one of the greatest, some of the greatest discussions that you could expect an 18, 19-year-old to be able to form in their minds. So it's used for that as well, Queen.
Okay, so again, go to manhoodraceculture.com and go to the educational tab and check it out. Okay, so Dr. Jones, as I'm going to let you go in about 15 minutes because I know you have to get ready for another broadcast, but I want to ask you this before we do part ways for this week. Okay, so if a child comes home and it's a black male in about the fourth grade, and they say, I told my teacher today what you told me about Malcolm X. And my teacher said that this is not the environment for Malcolm X. We study Malcolm X during Black History Month. What would you say? What do you think that parent's response should be? Not only to the school, I mean to the child, but should they have a response to the school as well?
They should have a response to the child, which emboldens the child and celebrates them for their, you know, their academic interest, their intellectual curiosity. But they must also address not only the school but also the teacher. I'll give you a perfect example of that because that actually happened to me. My son came home very, very, very bewildered. You know, I won't use the word upset, but he was definitely puzzled. And, you know, we were having a conversation, and I'm like, oh, you know, what happened at school today? He said, Dad, do you believe that teacher, and this is how he talks, that teacher said that we ought to be happy that we're in America because the kids in Cuba have tape put over their mouth and are not allowed to speak. And so my son, being who he is, raises his hand, trying to still be polite, and says, I've been to Cuba, and that's not true. And so the teacher kind of laughs it off and says, James, you've never been to Cuba. What are you talking about? Americans are not allowed to go to Cuba. And he says, I've been to Cuba with my dad. And they listen to phenomenal jazz music there, and they have great food. And so I guess she thought she was just appeasing his imagination. And he says, we go there every summer to visit my auntie. And she said, okay, you have an auntie in Cuba. And James said, yes, my auntie's name is Asada. And apparently the teacher went and Googled Asada. James goes ahead and that night took some pictures to school the next morning and lays them out in front of his teacher. And he says, that's me, that's my dad, and that's my auntie right there. And the teacher actually contacted me and wanted to know, and I said, yeah, he's not lying to you, he's been to Cuba. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. But that teacher, actually, when we went to Africa, James wanted to purchase his own books because they read a book a week. You know, a kid brings a book and, you know, the teacher selects one of the books. And he bought several books while we were at the University of Ghana about, it was African children books. That they were in English, but he, you know, it's a big thing. He paid with his own CDs and all that and handled what he had to handle. So he brings the books back, and the teacher would not read one of them, and he was just heartbroken. And so I sent her an email and explained to her, you know, how important this was, and I really asked her how many books have been bought in. Number one, about the African experience, and number two, how many books have been bought in by your first graders that were purchased in another nation?
Mm-hmm.
And that week she actually read James's book. You know, so I think that it's we can't we can't back down in the face of truth. You know, you just can't. You have to embolden your children to in every way speak truth to power. And then at the exact same time, you need to be their backbone for when the bullshit mm-hmm. comes, because it is going to come. And it's let's be honest that, you know, oftentimes, especially when that type of response is coming from white males, they're exhibiting leadership. You know, oh, he's a born leader. He's a, you know, but when it comes from out of the, you know, the, across the vocal cords of a black body, it is offensive to them. They're already afraid of our children. And they're not above, Lord knows they're not above, seeking and even executing and exacting revenge against our children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have to remember that the last time, if we believe Jawanza can do for, and I definitely do, that the last time that we had equal numbers of black boys and black girls sitting in a regular non-special education classroom is the third grade. So
mm-hmm.
this process starts off very, very, very early. So that's what I would say. I would back my child up, let them know that they know what they know, and we go ahead and we roll with it, you know. And it's that surrender that our people do, which is in many ways for me an act of cowardice, that really irks me. Because mm-hmm. when faced with these people who have been quote unquote educated by a flawed and gap filled, especially when we're talking about historical knowledge, gap filled system, we often stand down and cower in front of them. We need to be even more aggressive. We need to do what are they, the Chinese tiger moms do, which is be super, super, super duper aggressive in regards to the interest of our children. We got to protect our children's physical being, their spiritual well-being, their mental makeup, as if nothing else in the world matters. And truthfully, nothing else does matter, because it's in those children that our liberation is going to be found.
All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Jones. I've enjoyed tonight's dialogue, and hopefully the listeners have too. If you're listening on your phone, this is your last opportunity to push one to come into queue. If not, then we're going to go ahead and close out until tomorrow, Tuesday night, with Dr. James Jones. And Dr. Jones, our subject next week was MC.
Yeah, looking at hip-hop. But you know what, we may not want to. We can still do the MC. But I think I might hear from Floyd by then, and we'll see what
okay.
Floyd is talking about. Okay.
Okay. All right. That works for me.
All right,
everybody.
We'll hear from Floyd on Tuesday. Let's so you can advertise it as that.
Okay. All right. That sounds good, Dr. Jones. Have a good broadcast tonight with Brother Muhammad. Please send him my love and revolutionary greetings. And we appreciate you, Dr. Jones. We'll see you soon. We'll be here tomorrow night at 6 p.m.
Okay,
here on Sign of the Times. Have a good night, everybody. Peace.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop
right
on.
Mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, we don't need to escalate. See, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate. You know we've got to find a way. picket line and picket sign. Don't punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Right on.